Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I want to tell you about the ice cream. My wife is cutting. This is how serious we are about selling ice cream, is that my wife is done the commercial. After 17 years, I said to my wife, you love the Taharka ice cream more than anybody. You should do the commercial. So she talks about the key lime and the roasted strawberry and the tart flavors. I'm here to pimp the holiday flavors. $56, but it's delivered to your door. $15.70 off. Use the Baltimore Positive code when you check out. And you will not be without the delicious sweet potato crumble. I've been warning Marty Conway about how good the ice cream is. Marty, you're fit as a fiddle, and you and I went back and forth for real. I've angered everyone here this week, with the pumpkin pie and the aftermath of Thanksgiving. I thought the game being sanctioned by the league without a quarterback is something that, to me, is when Fonzie went over the Sharks, for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I just texted you and said, I'm happy to give you the number of my psychiatrist to help you get over the fact that the NFL is a profit opportunity. 100% now, 100%, there's not a question. It becomes a television show, right? Which is, and the show must go on. So the fact that anyone is surprised at whether they're playing on Monday, Tuesday, they're playing with quarterbacks, without quarterbacks, I think it's the clear realization now of what the NFL has become, which is primarily a television show, secondarily a live event. And when 47 of the top 50 shows annually are an NFL game in terms of ratings on television, then the show, meaning the games themselves on television, must go on, whether there's fans there or not. And this is much more clear now.
For all of the, boobs like me who grew up boo-hooing about records and Canton and, the sanctity of the game. And look, you came from the baseball side. By the way, if you're not following Marty Conway out on Twitter, you should, or LinkedIn, for all sorts of insights. Of course, the good professor at Georgetown. By the way, I got invited by the West Virginia University to lecture this week for advertising. So, Marty, I've now made it up to West Virginia. So, at some point, Georgetown will invite me in to just completely blow it all up.
I just at the
top of the top of the chain, I cannot believe that Steve Bisciotti and the Rooney family and Roger Goodell wants the world to stop Tuesday at 8 o'clock to watch a game sanctioned by them that is really not – it's below the bar of what they would put on the field in normal times, right? But I remember the replacement games. I know you remember the games, scabs, call them whatever you will, from back in the day. And I remember sort of the stain of that went away in about 5 minutes, right, when the other players came back. So maybe they look at it as something like that where, the Orioles played a game for nobody 5 years ago. Now they all do it every day, right? And and we all had a hard time with that. I just think there's a lowering of the bar of what you expect from the fans when you're sanctioning what they sanctioned. To me, they've jumped off the pier now. To your point, they've said what they are. But how does that affect them long-term, or does it not at all?
Yeah, well, let me say this. I don't think Adam Silver would allow that. But having said that, all leagues can't be run by, the great Adam Silver in terms of how he manages. The second thing to note, I think there's two things to note. Number one, there was absolutely, as far as we know at this point, not one leak, one peep from any owner. We haven't read anything that says there are owners who are growing concerned over the credibility of playing and how the COVID decisions are being made. We've not heard one. So either they're really doing a great job of staying in lockstep, or they're threatened with $1 million fines of speaking out. I suspect maybe both of those are true. Typically, in the sports environment, you start to hear things from the ownership level or the players association that are concerned with the decisions made by commissioners and management. So that's number one. We haven't heard any of that. Number two is the players associations themselves, right? The NFL has this unique situation where if they don't play, they don't get paid, right? And that's a big concern. It's not like the NBA. It's not like the Major League Baseball with guaranteed contracts. So I suspect, in addition to owners feeling concerned, the rest of the players on the Denver Broncos thinking, gosh, if we don't play this game, if it gets pushed to week 18 and then they decide, well, actually it's not needed to be played because it has no playoff implications or anything of the sort, and there's no paychecks being rolled out to the rest of the team, the players on the team, that's a concern. So I think there are a lot of unique dynamics to the NFL that compel them to continue to play. As you said, look, outside of Denver, or New Orleans where they were playing, I don't think anybody else in the country saw that game, right, in terms of the regional telecast. So I think
some of us thought it was going to be interesting, then it came on.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, it'd be one thing if the NFL said, we're going to make this our 4 o'clock, national game. But clearly that wasn't ever going to happen, and I don't know how competitive they thought it was going to be to begin with. But to your point, I agree with you in terms of the credibility questions and the quality control and things of the sort.
Good brands don't do this, Marty. I mean, you know that.
Of course they don't. But this strips away the idea that there's anything else here other than television show, gambling, other things that have to go on, and the NFL and their owners are so tied to this. Look, there's a great book by Jeff Benedict called The Dynasty, which goes in deep into the New England Patriots from the time the Crafts bought the team all the way through. I just finished that read. I'd encourage anybody else to read it. It is a true revealing book and really anthology about decades of ownership in the NFL and what it means to own a team and what all the issues are. They make some compromises that other sports wouldn't make, and they routinely do that, all based on the idea of the value of teams and franchises. And so, I think that's just continually the root of what they're going to do. They only postponed games after 9/11 for 1 week, and they didn't postpone games after John F. Kennedy was assassinated. So in the last 50 or 60 years, what has happened to NFL games? They continue to roll on through assassinations, through terrorist attacks, and now through a pandemic.
Marty Conway is here, longtime baseball executive with the Orioles as well as the Texas Rangers, and worked for an aspiring president at that point. And, I mean, look, man, you've been at the highest levels of all of this. I have made the case, and not because it's my team with 20 players or whatever. If I am Bisciotti, I am looking at this and holding my nose and saying, come on, guys, someone needs to step up here and play the Bowie Kuhn role of best interest of the game, or the Faye Vincent role of, come on, man, somebody get Jerry on the phone and explain to him this isn't a good idea long term, and let's come up with a better economic idea like the one the NBA and the NHL had. Marty, where were their 5 plans for if the COVID level hit 8% in America and hospitals in Houston were overtaken, or Baltimore or whatever, where cities couldn't house teams? I mean, they had that in New Orleans. They moved the team to San Antonio, right? Yeah. So there's all sorts of things that they could do. But to me, all along, every scientist said this thing was going to come back. It started to come back even in early September in Europe, that if they had a Dr. Fauci that they listened to, and again, I saw the way these guys spend money and where they voted and where their politics are and how they've behaved, quite frankly, the last 4 years in every aspect, quite frankly, that shutting the league down would be an affront to the president, an affront to the country, that it would freak the country out. But shutting the league down for a month and bubbling up the way the NHL and the NBA eventually did was a format that it just seemed to me they could have had that in their pocket and said, you know what? We're not playing games without quarterbacks. We're not sending the Ravens without half their team to Pittsburgh. The whole country is in the midst of this plague. We're in the midst of this plague too. Let's not sanction this. Let's figure out a way to make more money. We'll shut the thing down for a month. We'll bring it back the week after Christmas. We'll do it in Vegas. We'll do it in LA. We'll have perfect weather. And you know what? You know, this is where I put my Jerry hat on, Marty. I say, you know, Jerry, you know, you ever see the World Cup? You know, we could, Marty, they could own February and March and play games every day against no one and make even more money and do it more safely and, like, do a genuine buildup as opposed to the road they're going down, which is this week it's the Denver quarterbacks and it's the Ravens team. Next week it's what happens 3 weeks from now if it's Pat Mahomes, right? Or that's the part that what if Calais Campbell's on a respirator a week from Monday? I don't know, but I thought they would have another nuclear option that they could roll out instantly and say, you know what? We're not going to lose this money, and we're not going to send the Broncos to play games without quarterbacks because we're going to have a plan B. And that's the part that I'm a little befuddled by right now.
Three words for you. No plan B. There was never a plan B in terms – I don't think at the NFL level, which is to say that. Again, they feel strongly. The part – look, I think what you're talking about makes complete sense. I think where it runs into challenges is, look, what one thing that the NFL has determined over the last 10 years in particular, they have a really difficult time based on – if you've ever you've been to the Ravens facility, you've been to practices, you've been to training camps – you see what goes on for one NFL practice, right? It's all recorded. There are all sorts of safety and things built in because of workman's compensation and things like that. It's seemingly impossible. Most NFL teams are now hosting their training camp at their training facility as opposed to some university because it's become almost impossible for them to now take practice on the road. And so one of the things that's been a challenge, one of the reasons they've had a hard time expanding into London is what do they do with these teams back and forth during a week? What if an NFL team comes to the United States from London and plays for 2 weeks? Where do they practice, right? So they've found all these things to be a challenge, which I think they all looked at and said, it's literally impossible for us to take even 8 or 10 teams, we think, and put them in one state, whether it's Texas, and split them between Houston and Dallas or San Antonio.
They wouldn't have enough gyms and hot tubs?
Well, like I said, I think they've looked at it and said, how do we conduct practices? How do we do things like that? I mean, I've seen teams go on the road for 2 weeks. You know, they go to the West Coast or they come to the East Coast. And from my understanding, from talking to people, how difficult it is for them to have a team come away from their training facility for 1 week.
Well, you remember the Ravens did it 2 years ago out in San Jose and then just bailed on the second trip and came home twice to the West Coast.
Yeah, so I think that's what they have found is they've created so many of these protocols during the course of a week that as they look at, like you, we've talked about putting bubbles up and doing things like that, they've just said, we just don't think there are enough facilities that can handle us. And then you get into, they don't want to share facilities. They're concerned about somebody watching them practice and do certain things like that. They would frankly, they're almost like they're all 65 and over seniors who would, as they say, just rather stay home. I would just rather stay home. I don't want to go out and have all that sort of hassle. So,
this happens and this could happen to anyone, right? Like, I mean, four quarterbacks go into a room on the day off. They all pop positive.
Yep.
I have no idea what the hell happened out in Owings Mills with the strength coach and how this happened, but I want you to get into the psychology of this if you're sitting in Dick Cass's seat. You know what I mean? Like, what a clusterfuddle this is.
Yes. Yeah, no. And look, you've seen already New Orleans, Las Vegas. I think we've seen some other teams that just hasn't really been revealed in terms of the penalty. That the amount of protocol, the adherence to protocols has been lax. It hasn't been 95%, 100%.
By the way, Marty, as expected, you know.
As expected, like I said. So when you look at what do we think is going to happen, look, if coaches, Sean Payton and John Gruden and others, can't figure out a way to wear a mask or a shield on the sideline, what do they expect the players and or coaches all the way down into strength and training are going to do?
All that leadership you teach about means something, doesn't it?
Exactly. So in terms here, I think that's why it's difficult for the Ravens, and I have great empathy for Dick Cass and the Ravens as to what's happened here, but I think it makes it difficult for them to come into the league and then say, we need to make a change because if they didn't have adherence all the way down into their strength and training staff, then the league says, you know what? We told you this in our 164-page memo prior to the season. Position groups, if it gets hit into position groups, we're going to continue on. So be prepared. Have more people on your practice squad. Have a variety of people on your practice squad and be prepared to go. So this has been a huge learning for the NFL in terms of the size of rosters, what they're going to be doing in the future, and how they're going to even have developmental teams. Because if this happened to baseball, they just call up 20 players and suddenly they had these secondary facilities, you know, and they had the ability to call these folks up. So I think the NFL has been tricked up by some of their protocols. And again, I have great empathy for teams that are impacted by this, but I think the NFL saw some of this coming and just didn't really have, like I said, just didn't have a plan B.
But from a competitive balance standpoint, right? You know, I go into Royal Farms and I get chicken and it's not what they said it was. Yeah. I take it back and say it's no good, or I don't go back there anymore. That would never happen at Royal Farms, of course.
Right.
But to me, with any brand, with anything out there, to say we are going to serve this at less of a level, and to your point, the legalese of this and the 164 pages and the heaviness of the Players Association and competitive balance and all the science and all of that is, take your medicine, Denver. You know, yeah. Your four hillbilly quarterbacks decided to come around here and roll and have a pillow party on a Tuesday. We have video of them. We have wristbands of them. We have the eye in the sky does not lie. Denver, take your medicine. And then I see on Sunday, like, if the Broncos were owned by Jerry Jones, maybe that game would have been done differently. And I don't think there's any doubt that people believe that to be true. And it may be true, just given the fact that the Ravens got moved medically, of course, and they're popping dirty tests on Sunday and still playing on Tuesday. I just think it's really slippery, Marty. I mean, all the way around in the way that they've done this to say, you take the medicine, you know, and Bisciotti to say, all right, we fall on the sword. We were dirty. We'll go play this lousy game and get our ass kicked. You know, that's fine in the spirit of the competition as opposed to, I don't know, forfeiting a game like we did in Little League when too many kids were away on summer vacation or whatever. Mm-hmm. But and I know the players need to get paid, and I know that whoever's out there playing for Calais Campbell gets paid on Tuesday because the developmental squad, number 14th guy, comes off the bench and plays. I get all of that, but what does that mean for their – what does that mean for the customer who ordered the fried chicken? And that's who's showing up on Tuesday night, and they're sanctioning something that shouldn't be sanctioned. It's like the Stones playing without, you know, well, they played without Wyman, but, you know, it's like them playing without Mick, you know, and I don't – I just don't think this is the end of it, Marty, and that's the part where I think they've jumped off the ledge. Now, how many more of these Eddie Fainer games are they going to play, and then what happens in the playoffs? I just think they've done a really poor job strategically, and I think that will bear itself out for Steve and for the Rooney family and for Roger when the whole world is watching this. I don't want to call it an atrocity because real atrocities exist, but what travesty, whatever this is, that should be below the bar for what the league should want to sanction. And maybe you would say 30 years ago, there's no way old man Rooney and Modell would have let this happen.
Well, I do think there's points to that, and that is the current ownership of the NFL is not what the ownership was in terms of the collective. But to your point, how many times removed from the original Beach Boys can the Beach Boys travel and still call themselves the Beach Boys when they only have one original member, right? So I think that's sort of what we're looking at is what team really played on Sunday, what team is really playing on Tuesday ultimately. So I do take that point. But I would pivot you back to this, and that is you make a really good point about the quality and the presentation, all that. But what I would ask you is, and I'll answer it for you: who is the customer of the NFL? And if you say that it's you or I paying fans, I'll tell you, no chance. The customer of the NFL are the television and streaming networks who need these games. That's who their customers are. That's their number one customer. You know, this isn't a Chick-fil-A where we say, you know, my pleasure. It's not like that at all. The fact of the matter is, what we've seen this year is they really don't need people in the stands. I know that for coaches and for leaders like Dick Cass and others, they do sense that there's a great competitive advantage, and I agree. There's competitive advantage in Pittsburgh and Baltimore and Green Bay and places like that. But I think what they've learned this year, and fans have understood, is I don't have to be in the stands. And ultimately, it's my money is, I like to spend it. It's sort of a recreational and entertainment spend for me. But at the end of the day, the NFL looks at their customers in New York City and Los Angeles as the television and streaming networks. And that's only going to increase, because today, 16 to 25 million people will tune in to watch. It'll be interesting to see what the ratings were locally in New Orleans and Denver for the game. I'll tell you that they probably didn't put a more than 10% dent into what they would normally get on a weekly basis for their games. Regardless, and we talk about this all the time, one of the challenges for the NFL in marketing is who's under the helmet. We really don't see. I mean, they put a undrafted practice squad wide receiver in at quarterback, and they played the game, and it ended probably the way most people thought, which is a 20-plus win, point win for the Saints. So I do feel the empathy of what people think about in terms of the quality out there, but for me, the key customers for the NFL are the heads of the television networks, and they're getting exactly what they paid for.
Marty Conway is here making the other side of the argument, which is great around here at Baltimore Positive. We try to bring people in smarter than me and ask questions, try to learn a little something about this. All right, so where do they go forward? I mean, okay, you know, they're going to stumble through this in the way that the Marlins and the Cardinals on the baseball side. Mm-hmm. Do you see a playoff bubble as something they would concern themselves with, knowing that this could have happened to the 14-2 Lamar Jackson Ravens, and this could happen January 10th, and then they have a bigger issue about the validity of the competition that they allege at the top through gambling, refereeing, all of that, that they're putting a fair fight on the field? I really would hope, Marty, that you and I are not having a louder conversation about this, and that I'm not being a bigger jerk than somebody in New York would stand up in the corner and say, but what about the games? What about integrity? You know what I mean? Like, somebody should be blinking an orange light. I mean, quite frankly, a deep ruby red, quite frankly, when we watch what the outcome of Tuesday night's going to be.
I think your point is taken. To me, I think the first round of the playoffs, they could potentially play in their home markets. And again, I think they'll take once the playoff teams are clear as possible, then I think the protocols probably even become more specific. And again, from what I understand with certain NFL players, they have basically foregone their, with the exception of their immediate family, contact with literally anybody else. And so I do think that there will come a point. I don't know if that number of teams is 8 or if it's 4 or whatever that number is. I look at markets like, you can X out California because I don't think that's going to happen. But I think you look at markets like Arizona. I think you look at Texas and you look at Florida as places that they could send multiple teams, assign them to campuses that are fully equipped for athletics and practice. And they have multiple stadiums that are available in the state.
Give me those again. Where do you?
I think Arizona, I think Texas, and I think Florida are three states that they could send multiple teams to.
So you don't think they would play in LA or in Vegas?
I don't know specific. Look, I think California is having a difficult time with the virus, and you've already seen Santa Clara County say we don't even really want practice in games. For the 49ers.
Fair enough.
And so LA County has had some issues as well.
Well,
so
the mayor of LA, I know his name because of the plague, right?
You know? So the high rates of infection. So I think the issue for Vegas, frankly, Nestor, is at this point yet, they don't have enough other facilities around. I don't think they probably would have enough university facilities that would qualify as NFL competent. But I think if those other three states that I mentioned, you have multiple places where they could practice, they could bring them in essentially sealed transportation, sealed accommodations, and I think that. So I suspect that's at play. I just don't know if the number is, they're going to start, I guess, with 14 teams in the playoffs, and maybe after there's an initial round, I guess they might be down to 8 or something like that, that they all could move those to ensure as much as possible. But again, they'd have to go to the NFL, the NBA protocols, which are, just keeping everybody away from the players. And so I think that would be possible for them. And at that point, you're right. then I think they start to look at, you know, if Ben Roethlisberger is tested out for a week and it's a playoff game, then there are, you know, other implications.
Marty Conway is here. He's the good professor at Georgetown University, longtime Major League Baseball executive and insider. Yeah, I'll turn this turn the boat a little bit. I mean, Elias – by the way, Marty, did you see the Elias memo that came out right before Thanksgiving?
I did. Yes,
yeah.
I did.
I found it fascinating that he quoted John Angelos in a quote that I had to hijack a Visit Baltimore press conference to ask him to give him that quote that they then could use. So I find it, you know, like sort of the circle of life in all of this. Where's the rest of all of this, right? I mean, as we sit here and watch the Broncos play without a quarterback, the Ravens play without a team, and we're only in week 11 or week 12, wherever the hell we are in this thing, basketball, hockey, trying to figure out fans and sales and sponsorships and stadia, and the Orioles doing, well, the Orioles don't usually do much till March anyway, but all of that, like everyone is in a freeze mode. And I know you take real umbrage and you get pissed at me. And I think Chris Pike, anybody that worked in the industry who really understands when a guy like me says, stop the games for a month, right? Like there's a whole different level of, whoa, 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 dude, you're the guy on the radio, you know? But I think there's all of that for all of sports in 2021, whether you're talking Masters, whether you're talking Preakness, whether you know, whether you're talking fiddlesticks, you know, whatever, whether you're a rock and roll band, whether you're a Meriwether Postman, all of that, right? Like it is really, really a crazy time for everyone in any sort of entertainment vehicle that maybe isn't made for TV, right?
Yeah, I think there are three phases to this sports, to the sports angle in the pandemic. There was no games, phase one. There was no fans, phase two. Phase three is some sort of fans back in the stands. I still think today, as we talk about this, like you said, around week 12 of the NFL season, we are a long, long, long way off, I say it three times, before we are into any level of phase three. I think the implications here are, you know, I say this on Twitter, I've said it as many times over the last several months, decisions that were made by league commissioners are now made by local health commissioners. And I don't think that's going to change into the spring, into the end of the first quarter, early second quarter.
So you're saying the Santa Clara model, the middle finger to the 49ers, is right up there with Canada giving the middle finger to the NBA. Like that is going to be Larry Hogan and Johnny O are going to be the bad guys. Yep. Brandon Scott, right?
Yeah, I think that comes down to that, which is there are going to be pockets around the country, whether they are in the West Coast or whether they're in the Midwest or other places, where the local authorities are going to continue. Look, they're making decisions on schools. They can make decisions on sports. I think it's completely relevant for them to do that. But the idea that we're going to have any level of fans viewing games, even into next year, I've already said today, I think that Major League Baseball tops out next year at 120 games. I think there's no way that they can announce a schedule that doesn't have significant gaps built in to catch any games that are canceled early because of some of these issues. So I think that the NFL the NBA has come back with 72 games, right? The only reason it's 72 is that's what the majority of their regional sports network contracts say, that unless they play 72 games, they have to rebate dollars. I think you'll be looking at that at baseball. I think hockey will come back in some form of a league and, you know, a division in Canada and two divisions in the U.S., something like that. So I think this continues a long way in the road until April, May. I think people are still wearing masks when they come back to games until the end of the summer. I think September is the next time where you can actually see maybe a crowd of people at a game, pick the sport, doesn't matter. I think that's the time when it can actually happen. And I still think people could be wearing masks next fall because of the sense of, I'm not really sure where this virus is, even though my friend has been vaccinated, or I don't know if my friend is vaccinated, whatever. So I think this is going to be, there's going to be remnants of this well into 2021, and the financial implications and the employment implications for that, I'm very fearful of people in the industry never getting back to work.
Well, it's never going to be the same industry again.
Exactly right. And so I think it's, you know, what we used to think about as an annoyance going through a magnetometer after 9/11 I think you're going to have temperature checks. I think you're going to have scans. I think you're going to have extra scrub on facilities. Gates won't open as early as they used to. You won't go to batting practice. They're going to keep rings of protection around players as they warm up prior to games. So I think this will be the norm for the
next season. So much for autographs, huh?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the idea of shaking hands and autographs are a long way off.
Marty, I appreciate you, man. You staying clean? I mean, how's the Zoom teaching going? I mean, fire me up here. I mean, I got to give a speech. Let me tell you what the class here says so that I give a good lecture here. Because, sure. I'm not sure if I'm qualified to do any of that. I'm not sure. Most people think I'm qualified to do what I already do. Principle of advertising, the impact of social media platforms on advertising. Talking about this is my role as the owner of WNST. How about that?
I love that. The fact that you are exclusively a digital advertiser, so you are actually where people are going to be 5 years from now. You've been ahead of the game for a number of years, and now you'll be in that same situation. That is, how do you monetize your business when you are exclusively social and digitally focused? So I think they'll learn a lot from what you're doing with your business.
Don't talk me into believing that I'm qualified. Certainly don't talk my audience into it. I mean, that'll drive everybody crazy. Marty, I appreciate you, man. Stay clean, wash your hands. I wish we could go over to Amici's and get into some proper chicken parmesan, but soon. I mean, you said next September you'll be down here for a ball game, so I'm going to hold you to that. I'm buying, all right?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Marty Conway. Oh, by the way, before I let you go, Springsteen, anything you want to say on Bruce?
He's going to be on Saturday Night Live on December 12th, right? And so, again.
You like the new album, I guess, is where I was going.
I think for where he's at in his stage in his career, I think it fits perfectly. I was listening the other day. I still think the period of the late 70s was the peak Springsteen in terms of as I listen, you know. But I think, look, where he's at in terms of the stage and what he's capable of doing in terms of rock and roll, I think it's a perfect fit. I just hope people will be able to see it live sometime in the next 12 months, man.
Man, I went through a little period a couple days before Thanksgiving where early in the morning, and I'm a worker at 4 a.m, and I cranked up some Springsteen from 13 and 16. I had a Madrid show that was pure magic. Uh-huh. Incredible Milan show from 16, I believe it was.
Right. That's
incredible.
Right.
And I mean, so the internet has allowed me to, I found the Van Halen Tokyo 1989 show. Marty, I'm not kidding you. They were sober. Literally, I found the sober Van Halen tour. And the Springsteen thing, it's fascinating for me because, like, I'm so into all of that. And I did a River tour show from the 16, Madison Square Garden one night. I put that one on. So I've been listening to a lot of Bruce around here, but I have not dived totally into the new album. It's background, but I haven't spent time with it. Everyone that I know says it's going to be my tunnel of love at this point in my life.
I think that's probably right. I think it'll rate ultimately higher than that ultimately. I think there's going to be a couple songs off here that he's going to take from where it is. And when they're played live, it's going to blow it away. So I think it's like Land of Hope and Dreams, which is kind of a nice song when he recorded it, but it's turned into one of those anthems live. I think there are a couple songs on here which become either show openers or sort of in the encore, because I think people will resonate and connect with a couple of these songs that he's written. So I think they'll be favorites in that respect.
What's more Baltimore positive than Land of Hope and Dreams? Grab your ticket and your suitcase. Thunder's rolling down this track. Hey, I appreciate you. Take care of yourself and be good to the children. Teach them well down at Georgetown, all right?
Okay. All right. Thanks, mate.
Marty Conway, you can find him on LinkedIn. You can find him on Twitter at Marty Conway. My favorite guest around here. Not my favorite Hall of Famer. That's Rod Woodson. We had him on last week. You can find all that out. The Baltimore Positive, Stitcher and Apple and Google and iTunes, all of that stuff, it's available. Just subscribe to Baltimore Positive. BaltimorePositive.com is there for you as well from wherever you are. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking to Harker Brothers Ice Cream and Baltimore Positive. My wife's going to try to sell you on our deal.